So hi, I'm Steve O'Donnell. I'm Chief Executive at Greenbytes, and I'd like to say welcome, Brian. Thanks very
Yes,
much. Nice
yes.
to see
Thank
you.
you. Yeah, my name is Brian Madden, and I'm a blogger about desktop virtualization. And so thank you for joining us. And as we talk about VDI and desktop virtualization and storage and all sorts of fun things like that.
So Brian, this whole desktop virtualization thing, it's been happening for a long time. I mean, you told me you've been doing this for 10 years now, is that right?
10 years as a blogger on brianmadden.com, my first project with Citrix WinFrame was in 1997.
Wow, that's a long time.
And I thought that at some point I would eventually get on to doing bigger and better things in IT than not just worry about desktops, right? But we kind of turned the tail on itself and made desktops cool. Because virtualization, I mean, virtualization is cool, right?
No,
And
absolutely.
yeah.
I mean, that's what we both make a living for, right?
Yeah.
But desktop virtualization's come a long way. I mean, we've seen way back in the early days, the terminal server. Now we're really beginning to see desktop virtualization that actually looks like your real computer. Now, I think what we've talked about here is that we've built up this really compelling reason for having terminal servers, for having a virtual desktop, maybe a bit of terminal server, and the bring your own desktop thing. But why is it that so many virtual desktop implementations just run into the wall? People.
Hey guys, how much tape do you have in those things? Why do these products run into the
Why do they run
wall?
to the wall?
Oh, we can spend some time on this.
Yeah, well, it's an important question, isn't it?
I mean, well, the reasons are plentiful, but the biggest reason to me, and I spend my life out there running around and talking about this stuff. The number one reason to me is that the Microsoft Windows desktop has been largely unchanged for 20 years. Windows NT 3.1 in 1993, literally, that's literally 20 years. Windows NT 3.1 on a laptop is basically the same thing as Windows 8 on a laptop. Probably there's the same code in there somewhere.
Oh, there
And
is.
IT has spent 20 years crafting the desktop as the face of IT to the user. So the user's desktop has your programs, your data, your wallpaper, your cursors, your videos. It's all bundled up in that
You got your
desktop.
family on the back on the wallpaper, you've got your latest holiday, or maybe your boat, or your car, or your motorbike, or
And
your baby.
it's not just that Chrome stuff. Your data is there, but the way all the applications are hooking into each other is there. So Word opens up the PowerPoint viewer for this OLE embedded object and uses Chris Reports generator, which goes to a macro over here and pulls this printer. That's all. The desktop is the hub of that. And so the problem is, if you want to start to break that up into these I should say, if you try to change that, that's bad. So a lot of desktop virtualization projects fail because people want to save money, and so a lot of the vendors who are doing VDI are saying, "Hey, you need to go to a shared desktop model," for example, because they say, "Wouldn't it be easier if instead of having if you have 1,000 users, instead of having 1,000 different desktops with 1,000 different images, wouldn't it be easier if you had just had one image to manage?" And the
You'd
answer
think
is
so.
Well, the answer is yes. Of course, that'd be easier. Yes, that'd be easier. But
But it's not how real desktops work, because
exactly.
you have a single desktop image and you roll it out, and then you allow the users to do the manual configuration and customize it for themselves, right?
Which is, again, Windows NT came out in 1993. We, as an industry, have had the technology to push the standard, same, identical image to every user for 20 years. We could essentially, if some VDI vendor is telling you that, "Oh, we're going to have these non-persistent images so that every time the user logs off, it's refreshed back to scratch, and then we use profiles and app streaming to customize it on demand." Well, think about this. If I'm refreshing your image every time you log off, what's the analog to that in the traditional desktop world? That's like saying I'm going to re-ghost your machine every night. How many organizations are there on the planet where the user land desktops are able to be re-ghosted every night? It's impossible.
Well, wait a minute. What if someone goes into NetMeeting, or GoToMeeting rather, and then downloads the component into their browser, and then they get the machine re-ghosted overnight? Doesn't that go away?
That's my point exactly. This is why.
And what about virus protection? You get the latest virus updates or the latest patches on your computer, and then they get wiped out for the next day?
Well, the vendors argue that, oh, that's better because they just update the new image every day. So every time you connect, it's always a fresh image that has the latest patches in it.
Right.
But it's shared.
No one does that.
Well, I know. That's why I wrote the book called The VDI Delusion, available on Amazon.com for $27.99 hardcover, $9.99 on Kindle, also on Nook and iBooks. Yeah. So we call it the VDI Delusion because it's delusional. It's crazy because you're right. No one does that.
They can't. It's impossible.
Exactly.
It takes too much work.
But the thing is, so in the physical world, if you have 1,000 laptops in your environment, you're not re-ghosting these things every single day. But then when you go to VDI, the vendors are saying, well, what you're going to do is use this non-persistent image, and it's refreshed. And the people who are buying this are like, oh yeah, new image every day, that's awesome. Whereas I'm shouting, no, if that was awesome, you would have been doing it for the past 20 years. But you're not, because you can't. So why in the world do you think that when you go to VDI, all of a sudden, like magic, all your users are going to be okay with it?
Even if we do update the image every day, don't we lose the GoToMeeting plugin and all of the other personalizations that happened?
Yes, that's my point. That's why it doesn't work. And so this is getting back to your point about why VDI, talked about like the challenges with VDI or why VDI fails or, kind of real world stuff. This is it, because the way a desktop works for the past 20 years is users could do whatever they want with their GoToMeeting plugins and their Facebook whatever is and their pictures of cats and everything. Sure. And then we move them to VDI and we lock it down and say they can't make those changes. They can't do their GoToMeeting plugin. If you want a new application, you have to go to your help desk and make a request and have to install it and build it into the base image and then test it and put it and everything.
Is that a surprise that people are going to Best Buy and going and buying their own computer and doing it themselves?
Well, yeah, exactly, or using iPads and just doing themselves, exactly. So when you look at why VDI failed, in the earlier days of VDI, in order to get the cost justification down, the only way it would work from a storage standpoint is we said we have to share one disk image that all of our users are using.
Now, that's because when you've got 1,000 users or 5,000 users or 10,000 users, you need a ton of capacity on your storage.
Yeah, capacity and IOPS, frankly, also.
So what are the numbers? What kind of numbers do we need for 1,000 users?
Well, so it depends on how you're counting. I mean, so because in my world, I agree. It is true that, storage in the data center is obviously orders of magnitude more expensive than storage that's in your laptop. And so the back of the map of the napkin math says something like, okay, well, I've got 100, my users have 100 gigs each, and I've got 1,000 users, and so that's 100,000 gigabytes, which is 100 terabytes of data center storage to make this work. And then the VDI vendor says, or just share the image. We're like, yes, shared image. So that's how we got on a shared image.
Yeah.
But so for VDI, to take a step back, for VDI to be successful, you have to deliver the same desktop that in the virtual world that users had in the physical world. So if your user has the ability to install photos of cats and that GoToMeeting plugin, then your virtual desktop environment must also be persistent and allow the user to install pictures of cats and the GoToMeeting plugin, which means persistent images, which means every user, if you have 1,000 users, you have 1,000 separate disk images, one for each user.
Yeah.
And by the way, when I say that to people, and a lot of times they kind of freak out, like, whoa, 1,000 different images for 1,000 users, that's insane. How do you manage that? And I say, well,
how did we manage it for the last 20 years?
Exactly.
There are sort of tools for
doing that. Right? Yeah, still desktops.
Yeah.
And so so I'm all about getting, when you go to VDI, do it with persistent desktops.
So what about the chief finance officer who's preparing the board paper and drags it onto his desktop, then leaves for the night and comes back and it's not there?
Yeah, so that's why
that
we have
happens
to,
all the time, right?
If you're doing non-persistent. So if you're doing persistent desktops where every single user has his or her own desktop image and it persists even through reboots, they can install whatever they want, they can put data on it, they can do whatever, that's the way to do VDI. But now to your point about what are these numbers when we're looking at how to build that in the back end, clearly we cannot use what I want to call it, like, dumb traditional storage for this, because if we did, it would be, millions of dollars. Yeah.
Right.
So the way we deal with that, though, is like, so the new sort of storage technology we have, and this is I don't even know, you might know the words more than me. I've been calling it block level single instance storage.
Yeah, okay.
I bet we could do some cool
Or
effects. Block level single instance storage. Have fun with that, editors.
right. I think it's so deduplication, compression, actually taking all of these desktop images, which are pretty much the same, apart from all the personalizations, and making sure that you only store one copy of them. In fact, if the problem that we've got is a storage problem, why are we trying to solve the problem at the broker level?
Thank you.
Right? Why not try and solve the problem at the storage level and do the deduplication there rather than having to have the user suffer for it?
You know why? I'll tell you why. Because the big storage vendors aren't solving this problem.
Yeah.
And so when you are entrenched in EMC and entrenched in NetApp and entrenched in HP for your storage, and they'll tell you the solution to it is to buy some also six-figure caching appliance, this is in between something, and fewer magnets in these things, and like that suddenly is the
It's all
answer.
gonna
But
work.
you're right, because when you the what has failed, so throwing more storage at it failed because it's just too expensive. Solving at the broker failed because that's what we're trying to get into, doing it on demand and inject everything, and that's changing too much, and you don't end up with the persistence.
And it's so complex that maybe most things work, but not everything works.
Yes, exactly. So, but if you can solve it at the storage level, the point you made about how these things are mostly the same, this is critical. Like the way I describe it is I say, so humans and chimpanzees are like 98% identical DNA, which I learned on Wikipedia, so that's definitely true. And so we look very different though. And even though 98% is identical, and I could argue the same for your desktop and my desktop, if we open up your laptop and mine, even though it looks completely different, you have different applications and different data, I've got different
But
apps and
the
data.
DNA is all the same.
It's all the same version of Windows, it's the same Office bits, it's the
DLLs,
same exactly.
most of the registry keys will be the same.
And in fact, all the stuff that's the same is the stuff that we're using most often, like the actual Windows system files and the boot files and the app program files. So if you have a 100 gig hard drive in your laptop, maybe it's 60 gigs full, I could P to V, I can move you to VDI, like just copy your whole hard drive into our VDI server, and you're taking now 60 gigs on that. Now, if I copy mine in, if our storage system was intelligent to look, I don't even necessarily think it has to be file by file, even block by block, and look
Block by
at these
block,
blocks are the same from user one to user two, it's only actually stored in the storage system once. And so now maybe I'm bringing in my own 60 gigs, but I'm only actually consuming, 10 gigs of actual new
You know, Brian,
space.
it's actually less than that, right? So on a pretty new virgin style desktop, about 1 gigabyte in a normal environment is actually unique. Okay, so if the user starts bringing in his own data, maybe big video files and stuff like that makes a difference. But there's such a huge amount of duplication, it's really insane.
Especially too, because I guess if you're talking about on laptops, all you've got are your files there. But when you're using desktops that are connected, all your start menu and desktop and My Docs is all on a network drive anyway, which is sort of
Or it's in
separate from
SharePoint,
everything.
or you've got it in your Exchange server somewhere.
So if you can do storage, if you can do the single instance block level storage, now I can have 1,000 users where the hypervisor thinks that I have user one disk image, user two, user three, user four. The hypervisor might think that I'm using 60 gigs per user, but the reality is that it's much, much more tiny than that because every block that's shared across multiple users is only stored once in the storage system.
That's
So I've
right.
got a very great story for capacity on that. But I also have a really great story on the performance and the IOPS because, so all my 1,000 users, it's the same Windows bits, the kernel bits, the DLLs. So those, in a very small amount of cache, like maybe in, 8 or 16 gigs of cache, I can probably cache, 80% of the bits that I need. So we can actually get to the point where we can make the virtual desktop run faster than a physical desktop because a virtual desktop is, most everything I need to launch Office and do all that stuff is all in cache on a super fast storage system.
So we've got a customer who actually demonstrates this. They got a Windows desktop and they run Visio actually on the desktop, and then they run Visio in a browser on one of our appliances in the back end. And it runs 3 times faster on the desktop as a service solution than it does in the local machine, which is fantastic.
We're getting to the point, this is true, where you Like applications can load instantly because everything's in memory already in the backend storage system.
That's
So
right.
you push the PowerPoint button and PowerPoint loads. It just loads. Like there's not a splash screen. It's just loaded.
Yeah.
And so you combine that with the benefits that the users have of you know, being able to sort of close their one machine, open another one, and walk over here and here. And now we're actually getting to the point where users, it's not horrible to use
It's
VDI.
actually pretty neat,
Yeah. And
frankly.
what's also cool is, because a lot of people have always said, well, you know, one of the problems with VDI is the graphical performance. So like YouTube videos and Flash support and that kind of stuff. But what's also kind of nice that we're seeing now is a lot of users, whatever device they're connecting from, be it a laptop or a tablet or whatever, you know, they have web browsers built in, they have media viewers and that sort of thing. So for example, if I'm using an iPad to connect into my remote work environment, I don't care if YouTube on VDI sucks, because if I want to watch something on YouTube, I'm going to the YouTube app on the iPad locally.
Of course you are.
And that's going to be the same with Hulu and Netflix and the video conferencing and all this kind of stuff, you know?
Yeah.
So we kind of have this nice benefit that we are finally able to make the storage for VDI work from a, in the sort of economics, a cost to performance ratio that we need with all this single instance storage. And at the same time, a lot of these applications, the consumer-ish applications that were always showstoppers for VDI in the past, are starting to move down onto the phone, tablet, laptop. Even if you have a thin client on your desk that connects into a VDI environment, that's your primary work environment, you can have an iPad sitting next to you, and you do your Facebook and YouTube and all that Angry Birds on the iPad, not in your VDI.
Yeah. But the other thing, of course, is that if you have a hardware problem when you've got a pure desktop environment or laptop environment, it affects one user generally. When you've got a virtual desktop environment with thousands or tens of thousands of users all being supported out of the data center, you've got a different game, haven't you? You really have to, you have to deliver reliability. And actually, I think you have to plan for failure, because nothing's perfect. Everything fails at one stage or another. Some idiot switches the power off, or something fails, some piece of hardware fails. What's your experience of that in the virtual desktop world?
Well, it's a good point, because, you know, historically we've screwed users one at a time.
Yes.
And that's been fine.
That's a good way of putting it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, I started out in the help desk, and like I'm very good at that. And so not the screwing the users one at a time, not the help desk. And that's been fine, because it's you know, as long as you don't screw the right user, the boss person, then it's okay.
It's actually the boss's executive assistant that's the problem.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And so that's been fine for all these years. But now we start bringing this all into the system, you know, under the guise of higher availability and more reliability. But when one thing goes down,
wow.
Yeah, like how many users, you know, that phone system like lights up if you have whatever it is, 100 users down. I mean, even if it's, if you have 1,000 users and you've got 12 different servers, you know, you're talking like 80 users are going to fail at a time. And so that's a big deal. So a lot of people don't fully appreciate that high availability with desktop virtualization is a requirement that needs to be designed in from the beginning. Because
yes.
A lot of people say, in traditional computing, high availability is like a paint that we put on afterwards. It's like a coating, and it's something that's an afterthought.
But you've got to start that way. You've got to start thinking, something's going to fail. How am I going to ride through the failure and actually not impact the users?
Yeah, and so high availability is not, because a lot of people think, so traditional desktops have no high availability components whatsoever.
Yeah.
Because they're so highly distributed. It's
and
like the
no
idea
impact.
Of, like when we talk about exploring Mars, and instead of sending one expensive satellite, we'll send one expensive robot. Let's send 1,000 tiny cheap robots. So if we lose a few, that's okay.
Yeah.
That's traditional desktop computing.
Yeah.
And now when we bring it all together, so we think, oh, these are just desktops. They're failing here and there. There's no redundancy in my laptop. Why do I need redundancy in my VDI? And it's your point, because when your VDI goes down, you've got dozens of users at once. So we have to have real high availability. This is not, I don't mean backups, right? I don't mean like we need like a Veritas tape library on our VDI. I mean, we need to make it so that when that server goes down, that user can just push reconnect, and he or she is right back.
Or alternatively, they don't press reconnect. They don't even notice.
Ideally,
that's the best.
Yeah, I should say, yeah. And what's nice with high availability is all of the technology to make this happen exists.
That's right.
And it depends on how it's designed from the beginning as to whether, how easy it is to do. And it also just depends on, it depends on how much money you have. Because obviously one that auto fails over and users don't notice is more expensive than one where the user has to manually reconnect, which is more expensive than one where the user has to wait 20 minutes and then connect. But we have all of these options to do. So if you want a system that just always works, That's possible, but now you have to have servers that can support that. You have to have storage that flips over. You have to have the routing and networking infrastructure that can support that. We can even do now site-to-site failovers, seamless. So it's like the vMotion type stuff. We can do that of desktops, and where every block of memory, every system block on the data side is replicated, and one site goes down, and the session pauses for a second, and then reconnects, and they've gone from a data center in one city to another city.
Right. So really, to make that work, you've got to integrate the storage with the broker, because you've got to be able
Yes.
to move that desktop image to another machine, and then the broker connects and reconnects to the new site. That is available today. We can do that today,
Yeah.
and it's actually a standard part of our product.
And
It works.
this is nice too. And this is, here's where I was talking earlier about comparing apples to apples, where so when you build this fully automated failover, users each can be their own person and have their own stuff, that's all very possible today, but that's going to be more expensive than your cheap Dell laptop. To do. Now, it'll be much less expensive than it was to do 2 years ago, but if you're comparing, I can buy a $300 Dell versus everything we just talked about, obviously this whole VDI, everything failing over, is more expensive, but again, your Dell doesn't have that functionality of the failover, and I can work from anywhere and connect into anything, and my data is all in the data center.
And then I guess the other thing that we've talked about right through this whole conversation is simplicity. Because we said that users are used to having their own personal desktop, and when they migrate to a virtual desktop that looks like the personal desktop, there's simplicity. There's nothing new to learn. We also talked about the IT support staff who've got all these tools and processes and the change management tools, problem management tools that are all designed for dealing with real desktops. And they suddenly work in a fully persistent desktop environment. But what about the architectures? Because people are used to having, VMware or Xen Server or Hyper-V and different brokers, the Citrix broker, the Vue broker. If the technology that delivers this solution doesn't address all of these, it's not going to be very useful. Haven't you got to have some kind of thing that's endemic that just works and simple?
Yes. Next question. Now, but I mean, but so the way you manage that, it's you have to look at what the common denominator. So for me, it's Windows. So if you manage the Microsoft Windows desktop OS, then I don't care whether that instance of Windows is running on a desktop or a laptop or a Hyper-V VM or a Xen VM or a VMware VM, I don't care. And so I'm managing Windows, and I don't care whether I'm using Symantec or System Center or Alteryx or Intune, how I manage. For applications, I don't care whether those applications are installed natively, I don't care whether they are AppV or ThinApp, or it doesn't matter. The profiles, whether I'm using RES or AppSense or Triceret or Microsoft UEV, it doesn't matter. I need to manage Windows. And then to your point, the support staff knows that Oracle client is installed this way, and it works the same everywhere, regardless of whether it's physical or virtual, local or remote. And so if from a desktop standpoint, you manage Windows. Now, what the broker is like a separate layer. Think of like the OSI stack, but this is sort of like the desktop management stack. The broker is the connection broker is a different layer. The storage is a different layer. The hypervisor is a different layer. The hardware is a different layer. So there are people within the organization that have to manage all of those things. But I would say that for me, if my role within the organization is managing desktops, I don't care whether I'm using VMware Vue or Citrix Xen Desktop. I don't care what hypervisor it's on. You know what I care about? Windows 7 service packs. I care about Intune. I care about antivirus software, and that I worry about that for Windows, regardless of how that Windows environment is running.
So in any environment, we don't have a monoculture. Some of the developers want Linux as a virtual desktop. Some of them might even want Solaris as a virtual desktop. So there's a whole gamut of, and sometimes particular applications only work on extremely old versions of Windows. I remember when I was running operations, we were even running Windows 95 somewhere in the data center because we just couldn't get the app off that version. So is that important, do you think, for virtual desktop as well, being able to deliver not just Windows, but Linux and Solaris and other
I
stuff?
mean, that's going to depend on the specific organization. There are solutions out there that can handle that.
Yes.
And my feeling, so look at like Virtual Bridges and
Yes.
Oracle both have KVM-based,
Right.
Linux-based virtual desktop infrastructure products. And I tell people that, so if you're a pure Windows shop and you're a pure, a Red Hat, I should mention, I guess,
Yeah.
in that space. If you're a pure Windows shop, everything you do is Windows. You're going to stick with what's familiar, which is going to be Microsoft or Citrix or VMware or whatever. And even though I know VMware has Linux-based administration consoles, it's all pretty, and you don't see it, that sort of thing. And so, if the idea of Red Hat scares a customer, that means that customer probably is not one of these Linux-type customers. So don't look at Red Hat.
Sure.
But if people do have this idea where they've got a lot of Linux or Solaris or something like that that they have to support, there are solutions out there that can support and deliver that. Actually, Oracle's, I know for sure Oracle does this, they do their virtualization. When they deliver the remote desktops, it happens not within the VM, it happens at the hypervisor level. So they can actually remote any VM, including Windows DOS. So you have VDI for DOS, VDI for Windows 3.1,
Wow.
VDI for Windows 95, because they're not in guest, they're actually doing it at the hypervisor level
Yeah.
and the virtual graphics driver level.
Yeah, Oracle are pretty interesting in this space. They don't seem to have a huge amount of volume, but actually a pretty interesting product set.
And again, it's this weird thing about Oracle that people who love them really love them, but maybe it's people who are locked into them are really, really locked into them.
Yeah.
And if you're really locked into Oracle,
Just a thing to
they have
have.
the stuff to deliver it down. And so virtual desktops, the way virtual desktops work at Oracle is it's actually because they've got so many different products that are so incompatible with each other from all the acquisitions. They realized at trade shows the only way they could demonstrate all their products was to put them all in separate VMs on the back end and then deliver them down to a tablet or to a desktop there. Then they realized, hey, maybe our customers want those too. So classic use case. You've got these big, bloated, crazy specific requirements, Windows applications. You want to use them on all the modern devices. How to do that? Get it off the device, throw it in the data center, and then just remote down the UI.
That's a really great use case.
Yeah,
And
yeah.
it kind of proves the point that virtual desktop solves real business problems.
Yeah. And like I said, at the end of the day, to me, the bottom line is this is about Microsoft Windows desktop, so Microsoft Windows applications. And
Yes.
as I said, whether the world is moving away from Windows, whether tablets are replacing PCs, whether web apps are replacing Windows apps, irrelevant.
Yeah.
Whether those happen or not, we will have a world with Windows desktop applications for a very long time. And we, as IT professionals who are responsible for our end users, have to figure out a way to deliver those Windows desktop applications down to the users. And delivering those remotely with a desktop virtualization product is the way to do that. And so,
Great.
to that end, I believe that desktop virtualization will actually increase. Not because we are going to replace the user's iPad with a remote Windows desktop. I don't want that. But it's going to be that we're going to use it to augment for these old Windows applications that will be around forever. We'll deliver down these applications via desktop virtualization, and that'll be good for the next, 20 years.
Good. So, Brian, thanks very much for taking the time to have this conversation. It's been really interesting.
Oh,
And
yeah.
thanks for dropping into New England.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Thank you so much for the
Thank you.
opportunity to talk, and thank you all for sticking with us.
Okay, so thank you and goodbye from Green Bytes and Brian Madden.